So you have to turn your volume up so that if people you're gonna we're gonna use your audio.
Yes.
And great. And let me turn this off here.
You can see my
Or
screen,
I could
yeah.
use this to get the audience, get the rest of the people here.
How does your camera do that?
What?
Where it's like zooming into people?
I don't know. Zoom added some feature, some AI thing.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
It's terrible, right? It's always like looking over my shoulder. Right. I'm like trying to talk to people over Zoom, and it's like, what's going over there? And so, but okay. So today, so Rohit has been working on a bunch of stuff, and as you know, over the years, at the boundary between, vision and generative modeling, and human understandability and control,
You've not seen this talk.
and well, I don't know what this talk is going to be about, right? But so, but it's, he's an interesting juncture, I think, as we all are in the field, right? And it's been an interesting experience advising him, because I think that the field has advanced faster than we anticipated when he started his PhD. I think Roe has been very good at being at the forefront of a number of interesting things, but despite this velocity, the field keeps on moving in the forefront ahead, right? And so, I've been having this conversation with Rohit over the last few months of like, all right, he still has some time left in the PhD. Like, what's in light of this? What's the strategy? What's to do? And so I don't know if this talk is going to touch on any of this at all, but I think it's a very interesting case. Most of you don't do, most of you are in the language space and not doing computer vision, but I think that computer vision, I have to be careful because I'm being recorded, right? But like it sometimes gives the feeling of being a field that's getting very close to being solved. Right. There's a lot of like really hard problems have been standing out there for many years, and they're like, they're just so solved now. They're just products you can just go and buy for $20 a month. And so the question is like, what's vision? What's the vision now? Right. Okay, so what is it, Rohit?
Yes.
So welcome, Rohit.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Welcome, everyone. Thank you for being here. I know a lot of you traveled all the way across from the river to be here. So it's a very good introduction. And I originally had a totally different set of 48 slides last week when I showed the talk to David. And then the pearls of wisdom I got from him, get this, he says, I see a very good value in all your projects, but I don't see the purpose being reflected in your talk. And then he also sort of nudged me to think about, and we've talked about this a lot of times. Like I think I spoke to Tamar and a lot of you here about the same thing, which his vision seemed to have been solved, right? There are a lot of new models that came out, which I think tackled most of it. I think maybe we should wrap it up and like go home and start thinking about language models or maybe world models, right? But the more I thought about this, the more I thought about the advice David gave me, I came to this conclusion that I don't think vision is solved at all. We're not even close. And I'm going to like take you through 35 minutes or 40, hopefully, minutes of my talk, trying to convince you that vision just started. It just started as to like how we can change the way vision works and how if we don't do it, it would come to a dead end, thinking that it is solved. Let me see.
Can I add something to that?
Yes.
I gave a talk a few months ago at a place I won't mention, but I was making similar statements over lunch of, well, vision problems are solved. And some of the vision people got very
Because
upset.
an NLP person, you cannot say
Yeah,
that.
exactly. So I was thinking, well, it used to be that at NeurIPS everyone worked on vision. And then now everyone works on NLP and on or language models, and you can think, well, maybe that's because vision is solved. And that was my naive perception. But what they told me is that the hard problems are completely not solved. And they are like old, very old benchmarks where models are very far from humans, even in things like object localization and detection, like the basic stuff. And that the reason, that's the most interesting thing, the reason that everyone is working on LLMs is because it's easier. Which is an interesting thing. So I don't know if you feel this way.
No comments. But I do have a lot of similar thoughts. Yes, I'll talk more about them. And I think I'll draw some parallels to text too. So, okay, this talk is, I know I usually like to do a lot of interactive talk where I let you stop me in between. But for the first time, with my heart, I'm going to tell you, I want to practice like a one-shot talk. So please, if you have any, like if there are urgent questions which like went right over your head, please stop me and say, hey, this is not clear, so that I can be more clear about it. If not, we can do like a Q&A in the end. So also, I'd like to keep it slightly formal while also being informal and like trying to make you go through this journey together, right? So yeah, I started by telling you that I had totally different set of slides. And to get to this purpose slide, I had to sit 3 days on an empty blank slide and I could not get to anything. And I thought, is David tricking me? You know, what does it mean to have a purpose? Like, is it altruism? What is it like? So, and at the end of third day, I realized that I usually like to give my talks with a big load of motivation for my audience in the beginning to talk about why it is I care about the project and the problem in the first place. And then I go into like 2-3 slides of my results and then I end the talk. So turns out all it takes is for me to bring all of them together and then bring some of the heated conversations I had with most of you here about AI, about why I'm doing my research, and sort of sit on them for a good 8 hours and then it comes up. So I started by asking this question. Wait, why is it not? Yeah, so why now? Now especially that vision models need to be more readable. And I'm going to go into more depth about what readable is, why today, and why am I even caring about this problem in the first place. But I think for this audience, and I'm going to give a really controversial title, which is why interpretability is far more important in vision than text. And again, today is the word which is very important. Why it's today that it's more important than yesterday. Yesterday, I mean like a few years ago. So I keep coming back to this question whenever I talk about AI with any of you here is, it's a tool, right? Like built by humans, for humans, to sort of do something for us. And over the millions of years in the history of human, we have built so many widely used tools, right? Like starting from a million years ago, we had stone axes, which really I think is the reason why we survived as human race. And then we had printing presses that helped us communicate in mass amounts. I think also a good milestone for us as humanity to improve our intelligence. Then came calculators. If you recognize that, I don't think you would. That's a mechanical calculator. Even I didn't. And then, of course, smartphones, right? All of them have in some way been mostly widely used tools in our human history. Should I keep it there? I don't know. Maybe. I think it deserves a place, at least. But funnily, these models, AI models, have been there for decades now, right? Like, if you know that, it's called ELIZA. It's the first ChatGPT to ever be on Earth. It's from 1967, and you can talk to your computer, it talks back. If it's good or not, I can't vouch for it, but yeah, it used to talk back. And then sure, over the years, we have built so many tools that sort of increase this, our ability to talk to machines, right? And up until 2019, we had GPT-2, which I think was a part of discussion here, that did the same thing that we are doing today, which it can talk to you. Right? But why is it that over the 20 or 40 years in the history that these models did not deserve a place there, and why today? Right? And I thought, well, of course, tools are supposed to be to automate our human labor, make us more efficient, make our life easier. And that's the reason, right, that tools have become so important in our lives. Sure, I think that could be a good definition of tool in a Wikipedia page. But the reason that something becomes really widely used is because they are the tools that help us extend human intention. Humans in general have a need of showing their intention or like to make something happen in reality. And the tools that really make that happen are the ones that happen to be used widely in the history. So with language models, all this intention came at free cost. Like free cost, right? What that means is when you ask a model to do something for you, it's going to give a very nice description of, oh, sure, I'm going to like write a warm email, which is super funny. And you can see its intention right in the live, that it's trying to, what it's trying to write. And you can see its output and sort of understand every word that it wrote, right? And this intention of the model can be easily manipulated either by token forcing, which a lot of people here know about already. You can go and change its reasoning, or you can literally ask it to say, no, 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 I want to like do something else, make it more funny. And another thing is you can literally go copy, paste it, and change every word there is, and still be confident that it's still text, legible text. All of this comes at free cost because text in itself as a modality is very easy to understand and reason with, and also easy to edit the intentions behind text. So yeah, you can do all of this and the model can do the job for you. Vision, on the other hand, does not have this. So what I mean by that, in the recent history of vision, the problems that we all mostly cared about had a very universal ground truth, right? So they all have these accuracy metrics that if the model can get it right, then you don't really worry about what the intention of you as a user is. As long as its accuracy is 100% or 99, you're good. And what does it even mean to have an intention in accuracy model, right? As a user, you don't have a need to show intention. It's a universal truth. But for the first time, for the first time, we have a problem in vision which doesn't have a ground truth, right? We don't know what the true image should look like. It can be anything. And this is the first time we had a bandwidth as a user to show our intention. So what's the problem now? What is it that we are trying to optimize here? And for a long time, it's been about, let's try to improve the reality or realism of these models. And sure, that's been the problem. So over the years, we have definitely improved the way the realism works. And today, I don't know if, can you tell if that's a generated image or I couldn't? And that's, I just generated it last night from Imagen4. So I think we did. We did solve the realism problem. And I think that's where most of the conversations end in terms of, yeah, we've solved it. We've trained models that can sort of take an image, give any sort of output very realistically. It can take any text, generate any text realistically. And most of the problems are solved, right? So if we come back to the actual usability of it, as a user, when you type in a prompt, there's a bunch of neural activations happening and you generate this image. What if you want to change one small thing, like in your text, change a word, right? I don't like bass. I want a guitar or an electric guitar there. How do I do it? I have no idea. It's nothing is in a legible text. I cannot read whatever is happening inside the model. The output is a continuous space. You can't go in and change a pixel and let it, it's not an image anymore. So it's almost as opaque as starting from scratch. So I think now the real problem becomes that there are millions or at least billions of invisible decisions that the model takes internally for the one short prompt that you give, and it outputs an image that's literally uneditable by human hand. Like, not just, you can't just go and type a pixel number in there. So what I really hope is happening inside is, given a particular prompt, the model is taking multiple plannings and decisions internally, right? First, it plans the layout as to what it should draw where. And then for each of the small concept it is decided to draw, it has to expand how that particular concept should look like, and then eventually generates the image. I really hope this is what it does, right? If it's doing this, then the question of intention becomes such an easier problem, right? You want to replace a bass guitar, you know exactly where the model took a decision, you change that guitar, right? If you want to move the moon to the right, you know where it is that it took the decision, just go change that. It would have been nice if this is possible, but it's not, because I don't know if that's what the model is doing. It's supposed to be doing all of this internally. Maybe it is, maybe it's not, right? So I think that's the current problem, which sort of opens up vision now. Back to being at square one. We don't know what the model is doing inside. There's no way for you to touch the model and edit it, especially in vision, because language gives you an illusion of knowing what the intention is. And if my mother is using it and I'm using it at the same time, then I know for sure that it's a widely used tool, right? And I don't think none of you in this room have ever touched how like Luma AI works, or how Nano Banana can be edited using different text prompts. And for that to happen in the first place, we need to open up the model and try to understand how it works in the first place. So what does it take for us to make this possible? Is first, I think, for most, does it even have a structure? Does it have these decisions that the model is taking internally? First, we should expose this. And then hopefully that can be controllable so that users can control the structure and decisions that the model is taking. And then, unlike language, where you can just say, what else can I learn about this? You can't ask a vision model, because it's very hard to talk to a vision model in that way. So hopefully discover the concepts that the model has learned and the underlying structure underneath. And finally, after you get all of this together, find a means of communication between the model and you as a user, so that you make this happen in the first place. So let's talk about exposing the structure first. Earlier, in the very beginning days of diffusion models, when realism started to become a reality, we're like, oh yeah, we can, like, over a few years of research, we know we'll get to a reality point. People were really concerned about some of the concepts that the model are generating, which is not ideal for anyone, not the lawmakers, not the people who are hosting the models, nor the users who are using it. So we needed a way to sort of fix this. And the best available solutions we had back in the day were, let's just censor the outputs that we don't like, right? The way that this happens, I think even today, most of the models do it, which is you generate an image. Post-generation, there is a checker that checks, oh, does it have nudity? If yes, I'll not show it to the user, right? And there's a lot of research, including like white hat researchers who tried to overcome these sensors in the backend pipeline. And another solution is to completely retrain from scratch, remove all the training data that you have, which you don't want in the first place, but it's super costly, right? Like, if you want to train a new model, it will take millions of dollars and lots of GPUs to train this. So a neat way to put this is, imagine that you are in a beach and you hide a gold coin somewhere. And now that becomes a whole beach where there's a possibility that a coin exists. And what we are trying to do is, let's rebuild the entire beach from scratch where we don't have a coin. I think that's almost silly to sort of think about it in the first place. But another thing you can do is just take a coin detector or a metal detector, check around and keep digging till that detector stops beeping, right? I think this detector is what is called the structure finding method, right? If there is a structure like that underneath, we should be able to detect it and remove it precisely from the model's knowledge. So that's exactly what we try to propose, which is if that was a training data and pre-training model, we want a model that unlearns this knowledge without having to retrain. So the better solution is first expose that there is an underlying knowledge, and then we remove it precisely from the model's internals. So coming back to our original generation here, what's happening is this model is taking a text prompt C as an input, and it's giving an image X as an output. This is what a generator looks like. And the classifier which we are really looking for, the structure finding tool, is actually something that should take an image as an input and predict if it has that class in it or not, right? And specifically, it needs to detect the underlying data structure, which you don't know. So you don't have this classifier in the first place, right? You're trying to find a classification model from a model you never understand in the first place. Turns out, a lot of years ago, there's someone called Bayes, I think, who came up with this nice equation, which essentially turns this classification problem back to your generation paradigm, where you can just condition your model with the prompt that you don't want and just an unconditional empty prompt, and you can bring the classifier proxy out of your own network. And to really get that unlearned model, all you need to do is to keep your original original structure intact, except just ablate or remove the probability that your model generates the image that belongs to the class you don't want in the first place. So let's say you want to remove the concept of moon. So all you have to do, you can replace the classifier. And then all you have to do is run two prompts through your model. One is a prompt that you want to be removed, the concept, which is moon. And two is just an empty prompt. And you can do this neat equation here, which we can go into the detail later. And then if your original model was generating moon, even though it doesn't have it in the first place, you can train your network using this equation. And then, it just stops generating moon. So what this says is that there is an underlying structure, which you can easily detect using the model itself as a beacon to look for where the knowledge is and precisely edit it out. So there were, this is like a rough diagram taken from David's slide, where the model has multiple different modalities that it takes as an input. First, you have a text input through which you are prompting your model. So it goes through something called a cross-attention. And then you have your original UNet, which is what is actually generating the image in the first place. So you can remove or detect for this knowledge from any of these locations, and each of them have their own impact. For instance, if you want to remove the knowledge completely, the visual knowledge of the model, you have to look for this structure inside the vision aspect of the model, which is what we call ESDU, which is everything except the text side of things. And if you precisely want to remove the knowledge only when it is being asked for, queried for example, some artist style painting, it's usually queried through their own name. So if you want to be more precise, you can go and just ablate that structure from the text side of things. And turns out it also matters where it is that you are looking for in this, for the structure in the model, and it has an its own impact as to how deep of a knowledge that you're removing or tapping into. So yeah, so that method definitely erases the things that we don't want, but I don't think that's the whole picture when it comes to editing a model. I can randomize the entire network and still say, yeah, it removed everything. It removed the entire knowledge of vision. But then the thing that is really important is that the model is still intact for the rest of the concepts around it, right? You need to be more precise about what it is that you are removing. Only then will I be able to call it that, yeah, I found structure. So turns out if you ablate your knowledge from the cross attentions, you have much more precise representations of your structure compared to removing it from the visual side of things. And this was a very nice observation that we had, and which led to a follow-up with others and Jonathan, where we directly just attack the cross-attention layers and then find the structure within using closed-form solutions. So this once we found that, sure, there is a structure in it, can we really control the structure is the next question, right? We surely removed it. I would call that some form of control, but can I precisely more have a continuous control over this layer? Turns out, yes, you can very simply take the exact structure finding method from the previous work and linearly control it in a way that it has a continuous effect on your model. For example, if I were to bring all of the fine-tuning that I did for unlearning the model into a small set of parameters as a module, it does remove the beard, like so that unlearns beard. But you can also control the intensity of it, and it controls how much beard is removed from the model's knowledge, which is great. So it sort of tells that inherently the parameters that capture structure also has like a smooth controlling definition for them. And the nice part about it is when you can erase something, you can do the total opposite and add something. So you can add a smile, you can add glasses, and sort of get a very nice dimension of control over your outputs just by finding structure inside there. And this is not doing anything completely new. What we did is we took the erasing formulation and also added a enhancing formulation to it and found ways to control this knowledge linearly in the parameter space or in the weight space. So what I do is I take the person vector and try to move towards the old direction and away from the young direction. And that's exactly what this erasing parameter module is doing. So now what happens is that you can just using text as a method to find your structure, you can simply control the model's internal knowledge, right? So all I use is curly hair as a prompt to find the structure, and we can control it inside the model. So yeah, there are multiple dimensions you can control, and these are also composable on top of each other. So I can keep composing more and more structure on top, so I can make them have glasses plus old plus smiling, and you can keep adding up to 200 sliders is what we've tested. And now we can test more. But more specifically, this enables you to have a multidimensional control over your images. This is like, imagine being in a like 1990s, maybe, when you have a game engine where you can create your own character. You had multiple sliders you can work with, sort of create a character which you really like. This sort of composable sliding techniques will allow you to do this now. And funnily, we also found a structure inside the models that will self-repair its own outputs. All we did was ask the model to be more realistic and just made the model's structure move towards being more realistic. And it automatically started fixing its own outputs whenever it was breaking the physics or just drawing very bad bicycles. It just corrects itself and creates much better looking images. And originally, we thought that this was a problem of additional training or adding more guidance. Turns out this was just a structural issue. You can just fix the structure if you can find it. And this is another nice throwback to, I think, 2023, when your images were not able to generate nice hands. Yeah, you can fix them. And it was mind-blowing for everyone who looked at this at that time. Now it's every model can do this now. So, okay. So coming back to this, if you can find a structure and control it, I think this in itself will open up a lot of possibility for you to do explorations of this model and show your intent. And turns out this did catch a lot of attention in the community. So when we open source this method, we've immediately seen a burst of open source artists, like training their own sliders with their own creative imaginations and releasing it for the public to use. And this enabled, I think, a good amount of research within the Stable Diffusion community to work more on these controllable methods for enhancing the user's intention. And I think this was, I don't want to talk too much about it, but this was kind of the ChatGPT moment, I guess, I hope, where users were finally able to see that, sure, I can use these models to do something which I want. So we've talked about this, where as long as your models can't talk to you, it becomes really hard for you to use the models beyond what your own imagination is, right? For instance, let's say I've trained a model which is super realistic and does a lot of things, and my knowledge is that small circle over there. That's all I can explore using the concept sliders that I just showed you, because that's the extent at which I can prompt the model with, right? And hoping that I can bring a lot of humans into this crowdsourcing work and allowing their creativity to be open source, maybe I can extend the concept slider limitations to that area of its knowledge. But what about this area where the model learns a lot of things during pre-training, but it can't say what it has learned because that's not the way it was trained in the first place? Unlike language, I think language can gives an illusion of saying, yeah, sure, you should learn more about this. There's more to learn beyond this. So how is it to explore that? And why not just ask the model to talk about its own internals so that you don't have to be limited by your own potential? So what we do as a first step is we try to ask the model to generate a lot of images using the prompt that I want to explore, and then simply just decompose its outputs and find a slider direction inside its weights that would sort of latch to one of these decomposed directions. What it says is basically, I'm trying to look for the model's internal principal components about this particular concept that I'm very interested in. And this is completely unsupervised. So when I say Van Gogh art, I would get how many ever PCI directions I do, like let's say 300 directions that might be relevant to Van Gogh, which I personally would not be able to bring up in the first place. So let me show you some examples. So this is the best I could prompt for monsters. It looks pretty generic. It's the same probably monster coming up again and again. But once you open up this model's internals and look for directions that the model can draw, you start getting all these different weird looking monsters, which I don't have an answer for. I don't know what the captions that you see here are generated like post discovery using Claude. So most of them don't even match. I don't think this is Blue Bestial. That's the best Claude could do to make sense out of that direction. But essentially what my point is that you can start exploring features that you originally would not have thought of in the first place to prompt. And again, since we got them out as form of sliders, you can smoothly control. And this again opens up multiple dimensions of control, except this is creative territory where you don't know that they existed in the first place and you're just exploring the module. And the example that I am really interested and excited about is us exploring art styles inside the model. So art is a very studied concept in the world, of course, and especially in generative AI. So when we decompose the artistic styles inside slide, like inside the diffusion models, we found directions which are not human, which are not one-to-one human corresponding, but these are sort of principal directions that the model has learned to encode every human artist that it knows of. And what originally the human studies were done in the past to understand what artistic styles that the model could replicate. And then it took almost 8,250 artists, 7 months of their time, to come up with a list of 8,000 artists that the model can mimic, right? So Now you can literally explore this space using a single prompt and maybe 2 hours on a GPU and get most of the relevant slider or like artistic directions out of these models. So those are all the realistic artists, like the real artists and their art. And you can always argue that why do I need this exploration in the first place, right? You can simply use generic prompts like create an artistic style image. And then the model generates these bunch of images, which all look pretty generic. And the distance between the original distribution and the model generated distribution is quite high, right? And you can also say, hey, I'm in the era of language models. I'll ask the language model to prompt diverse artistic styles. And that should do the trick. Why should I ask the model itself to talk about it? You can, and it definitely covers a lot of distance. It's almost like half the distance now. You're much closer. And using these LLM prompts, we also do concept sliders. And then, sure, they are very close to each other. But when you really ask the model to explore and provide its own knowledge, and you see that it covers a lot of knowledge gap between the true distribution and what we have in our hands in the first place. So, yes. And this is a response to so slider space essentially is restricting you again, where you have to be the first person to seed what it is that you're looking for. What we did with this visualization is we took a concept of art and then started exploring within slider space again and again through an iteration, right? So what that means is you can click on any art and it will show you every nearby sliders around it, and you can control this space and explore it in a much interactive way. This takes a lot of time, so I pre-generated a lot of styles, and I'm showing you as a demo here. But yeah, it got to a place which I would never have imagined in the first place, at least with my creative brain. So, okay, we have found a way to discover it. Finally, coming back to this communication part, where when you ask something, the model is doing a lot of planning and generating an image. So as a user, I would want to understand what is the decision that the model made, and I want to communicate with that decision. For instance, I want to look at this particular person that it drew there. And I think that is the decision that is more relevant than for this particular generation. So how is it? Can I tap into this decision-making boundary, and how can I communicate with it so that I can draw the same person chilling in a beach, right? It becomes really hard problem when you want to now go into the model's decisions and internal decision space. So a quick intro to how the model that I'm working on looks like. So it's called Flux. It has two streams, an image and text. So both of them are processed together. You start from a noise, and then you do multiple layers of the same block. You also have like some fancy conditioning called time step and guidance. They all go into this flux block. Finally, it generates an image from the image stream, but then you discard the text stream because you don't need text when you're talking about image generation, right? This is how the model is trained, where it takes a noise, does a dual stream processing, and then you only take the image stream of things, decode it, and just discard that final. There's no optimization done on this text stream. So what we found is that what if we can use this rich information that the model has learned and discard the image side of things and look what the text has learned and what can we do with that text? So that's exactly what we do. We give the reference image that the model has generated to the same model again. And then instead of touching the concept that you want as a haptic, you can literally just say a leaf person on the left playing bass. So now we know that the leaf person belongs to that person on the left through captioning. I'm sort of capturing what it is that I'm really interested in. And when I use The same prompt, a leaf person chilling on a beach. The regular diffusion model draws this. And it's not that person, of course. Why would it? Except I can take these, the vectors that come out of this magic network, which I'll talk about in a few seconds, and take the information that it has learned and plug it into my generative model. And then it generates that. Right? You can tap into the internal decisions that the model makes and bring it into your own generations and play around with it. So the way it was trained is that the feedforward network, we show the image and the caption that it takes, and it generates this, what I call like decision vectors or customization vectors for each of the text prompt there is, so that if you're interested in the dog, you can take the vector of the dog token. If you're interested in the background, you can take that token. At least it gives you a range of communication bandwidth of how what it is that you want to customize or bring, or what decision it is you want to capture. I use the same reference prompt as my generation. So if the original diffusion model is generating some other image, I just ask it to generate the same image when all the tokens are applied. So essentially, I'm training this model to say whatever it is that you are generating from your vectors, word to word, they have to represent some delta towards the concept that I'm really interested in. Right? There'll be questions, I'm sure. I'm happy to answer them. If you are absolutely lost, please let me know. So yeah, it's a simple MSE that we do. And then there is no other additional captioning or annotations that we are doing. It's a simple text image captions. And using this, a single paradigm, we basically learn the true language of whatever is happening inside and the decisions that the models are making. So yeah, we collected 2 million images and trained this general purpose network that does this. So now what you can do is you can have a bunch of reference images that you want your concept to come from, and have a reference prompt to show what it is that you want to pick the concept from, right? So I'll explain these things. So this is the inference prompt. I said a dog sitting on a sofa, and the original model generates diverse, not so diverse, but very different looking dogs, right? Except now I can give this to my feedforward model and bring in the delta vectors from the dog token and plug it into this original seeds. And then immediately the model starts drawing the dog that's in the reference image. So it's essentially, I'm picking the concept and dropping it into my diffusion model. And yeah, you can see that for different dogs, it brings all the different dogs from the reference image and puts it into your generations. Oh, I had animation. Yes. Okay. So till here, this is mostly about what I've done so far. And I think I got 30 minutes. That's nice. So in summary, what I've taken you through is that we never had a way to verify if there's structure. We did now. We find that there is structure inside these models. You can control the structure. It's also discoverable. It's just the first step, and there are many follow-ups that sort of worked on top of this to make it more discoverable. And you can now communicate with the internal decisions that the model do. With this in hand, I'll show you what you can do now in the current today with vision models, right? So you ask for a photo of a woman seated on a couch at a cafe, and it draws this image. I think she's too serious, so I can add a smile. And then that makes the woman smile now, right? You can say, no, I want that couch from my favorite TV show. And say, I want the woman to be sitting on that. It brings the couch, right? You can also say, yeah, I think I want like some funky new hairstyle, but I don't know what it is. Let me ask the model what all hairstyles it has in its directory. And then I can choose style number 23 that the model gave me. And then it draws this. So now it opens up to a new form of exploring the model and working with them. And finally, it like gives you some room to show your intention as a user and what you can do in the first place. Okay, this slide took me 3 weeks to do it. So yeah, I can show intent in 3 weeks. But is this the real fix? I think now comes the main good solid 10 minutes portion of the talk. I don't think this is a real fix, especially because these are all post hoc methods. We are training the models. It's very similar to what you in the lab are doing with language models. There's one stream of researchers who are really pushing to go towards the top 1% AI model that can solve RKGI 3, 3.5, 5, whatever. And then there are us who's trying to be, oh, let me understand this. I don't know what's happening here. By the time I understood GPT-2, there's now GPT-10, right? So we are playing this cat and mouse game. And I don't want to be way too optimistic with language, but with vision at least, it's absolutely necessary that we understand the models for them to be even workable in the first place, right? I showed you a lot of slides earlier, which took 4 years of research to get it to a phase where I can show you one slide where I have to work for 3 weeks myself who built these methods, right? And I don't think that's no way close to being a tool that will help you show your intention. So I think the real fix has to be in like multiple ways, which always comes back to the same question as to what will make vision the tool that will be widely used in the future. And it's the same thing, which is, I think we'll have to focus on the intention of humans and how do we enable that to happen in the first place. And it's not an input-output game. I think we should like start moving away from it, where we are not trying to optimize towards what's the image arena number one model. So the first thing is, I think visual generation and interpretability needs to go hand in hand, right? What I mean by that is, when I start thinking about this, it's an upcoming work in progress project. Me and David were talking about, oh, how do we bring this into reality? What is it? And then the first question I wanted to ask was, what format should I choose to start this problem, right? I think obviously the answer is video, right? Because it has image, it has time. But then 3D is also nice because you can look at multiple views. I think world modeling is also nice. You can like explore the space. And the more I thought about this, not for a project perspective, but from a vision perspective, is that I think every format enables a new kind of intention in users. And I think that's why all of them are in their own ways very popular, right? World modeling is really popular because you get to explore it. You can play with it. You can say, go forward, go back, turn left, turn right. 3D modeling can show you different perspectives of the same image. SVGs, on the other hand, are very human readable. You can read the code that SVGs are built on top of. Images are really realistic. So there's signal processing. You can control sliders in Adobe Premiere Photoshop. And all of them, in their own ways, bring some sort of signal into your intention. And I think that's why they're popular in their own way. So ideally, this is the work in progress, where what we want to do is, every time a user types a prompt to generate an image, it's always heavily underspecified. Nobody is going to sit there and write a book of a prompt to generate exactly what they want in their image, right? That's, I think, unreasonable to ask from a user, which is why the model internally is expanding so many different things, having to do all this planning in the first place. So what if we bring that outside the generation process, right? And let the generative model just be a renderer, which has always been how vision was working from a long time ago, right? So if I were to have this planner that would plan everything out, ideally in human legible text or code or anything, any other format, that would let us as users understand what the model is deciding to draw, and then have this renderer whose job is literally just to render the image, right? That way you can edit your planning that the model has planned and see that edited in real time, or at least in the right way, where you can have 3D control over your objects and like have your objects rotated in any way you want. And to actually make this more useful, you would also want something in a cyclic way where it'll look at your image and will be able to give the plan that requires to be to render that image back, right? So every aspect of this brings some sort of intention from every modality that we have seen earlier, right? Your planner needs to know about 3D and world modeling so that it can exactly look at different angles, plan for different angles. Your renderer is almost like an SVG that takes a code and generates a realistic output, other than like that looks like SVG. And your parser needs to know a lot of signal processing to understand what image it's looking at, what contrast and composure that it has to do to generate the image back. And I think a good news is that it enables vibe coding too, right? This is a big chunk of new language, and you can literally stick a lot of agents on top of it and talk to your image and enable the editing through vibe coding, or maybe vibe imaging, right? I'm the first to claim it. And current modern day vision models are doing all of this packed into one single model. And all that we have been trying to do as interp researchers or controllability researchers have been trying to guess that this is what is happening and going and trying to control them internally. And I don't know if that's what I'm capturing. I just gave you a story that that is what is happening. I still can't guarantee that that's what is happening. But I think it's time to break that and have interp to come out of the model that there is and make this more usable for, and also like give the user an illusion that they understand exactly what's happening inside the model, right? This opens up a lot of other avenues. What is this planner internally doing? We don't know. What is the renderer doing? We don't know. But at least this sort of opens up a way for users to show their intention, right? Pushing these models to be more widely used tools. And the more I started making that slide, the second thing came out. Every time I show how reasoning works inside language model, it's always language. Sorry, inside vision model, it's always language. But how would a visual reasoning medium look like? This is slightly half-baked. I'm still not sure what it should look like. I think this can be a big research area on its own. But I feel like every vision person I can talk to will definitely vouch for this, that image medium on its own brings a lot more information that text can't bring, right? Or can bring, but it would take like unreasonably large amount of text to bring it. So I feel like having some sort of visual reasoning, visual medium reasoning inside the model would obviously be much more efficient for us to have this sort of, and also like human usable when it comes to generating these images. Like for instance, if I want, like the model might be planning inside that, oh, should I place the dot behind a layer one of the tree or layer two of the tree? All of these things are hard to teach to the model via text. And I think there has to be some form of visual reasoning happening inside. And finally, okay, so I have brought you into this room by promising that, oh, vision is going towards a dead end and I have the solution to fix it. But I have silently been holding back some information. I do hope that generation on its own, visual generation on its own, comes to some natural endpoint, right? Where visual generation is not a standing research area where people are working on it for a long time. What I mean by that is I think vision on its own has to be changed into something which is readable or which is easily explorable by us humans. Every time we look at an image, it becomes like such a novelty thing that I look at this nebula and I'm like, wow, this is so nice. But that's pretty much it. I can't explore what's happening inside that image. I don't know what the image is made of, what's the reasoning happening behind it. For me to understand that, I need to go to internet, search, read the text behind it, maybe make sense out of what that nebula is, right? And what I'm really hoping for is vision generation becomes a very small part of us understanding how the visual world works in the first place, right? Where you can finally look at this nebula and say, hey, I want to look at it from a different angle. And then your agent goes to internet, brings multiple images and forms a 3D rendering on its own internally. And you can go explore that space. You can click into that image, go beyond what you look in the first place. And I think for this to happen, if this all sounds like a sci-fi, well, of course, language modeling sounded like sci-fi 5-10 years ago. But I think this is what I really care about. I think I love images. I love visual world. But it always holds you back that you can't explore them and you can't understand them the way we understand and explore text. So I think eventually, I think that has to be, that is where I would retire, I think. So, okay, thank you very much. Did you have any questions in the beginning? Yes.
Oh, yes. So actually, yeah, I have a question for the end.
Yes.
So I guess when we talk about, like, I like your last slide, very fascinating, like, for example, like vision, like, or yeah, I wouldn't say vision, but I would say image generation is not solved. Because, for example, you can ask questions, say you want to see a 3D rendering of stuff. Actually, I feel like for vision, visual exploration or like interaction, like, what do you think will be a good interface? I feel like that's actually the biggest question. Or one of the biggest questions. For language, you know, interface of text.
Yeah.
But for images, you can sketch, you can compose things in layers, you can have sliders, you can have like text. You know, there's so many different things you can play with images.
Yeah.
So I feel like that's actually one of the things that's really hard for the image generation space to converge to.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking about, do you think whether we can just have just one model that tackles everything, or you can have like different into explore things into different angles? What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so following the talk that I gave, I think definitely it has to be multiple different models coming up and doing the same task as an orchestra, so that at least you have good resolution to look into what it is each model and like is doing. But I very strongly agree that looking at the technology side of things is one aspect, but the real aspect would eventually become what is the UI that a user is interacting with, right? And with the very narrow view that I have with the slides that I made, I think it becomes something of a hybrid UI, where given an image, you as a user, you talk or you type, and then the UI should eventually give you the controls dynamically, saying, hey, I want to explore this. Then it gives you like arrow keys for you to explore. And you say, no, I actually want to see a 3D view of it. Then it gives you a 3D slider to do a 3D rendering of it. Essentially, where you feel less friction when it comes to wanting to choose the right tool to do the right thing, I think it should be somehow an intelligent way to feed these controls based on your intention, if that makes sense.
I see.
But okay. Yeah, it definitely requires a lot of research.
I guess almost as if, like, for example, one like recent way I can think about it is just like an LM can call like a tool use, for example, make its own tool.
Yeah.
And then maybe create its own like widget.
So that'll be nice. Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's cool.
Yeah.
But doesn't it go back to the fact that your intention is more expressible with text?
What does that mean?
So you said like that the tool that you're going to use or the interface is based on your intention. And then you can prompt something like, I want to get like a 3D view of this, like, but you will use text to represent your intention. And then an agent or someone will convert that to like the right interface.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. So I'm not saying text is the only medium to show intent. I'm saying it's a good medium to express your intent. But then when it actually comes to editing or exploring it, it becomes like all these multiple dimensions of control where you're touching the image, you're doing some sort of a model walk or medium walk. There are like sliders which will give you control as to how much the person is smiling. But for like there should be some medium where you say, oh, I think this person needs to smile more. Right? But then it's not just by text. You're saying, no, smile more. No, even more. That's not what you're doing, right? When you say, I want to control the smile, and then the model should give you some sort of a new medium to control the intent that you have. But it's a good question. I think to start an intention, you need a way to communicate. And right now, I see text as a way to start it.
Yeah, I think text is very semantic, like very progressed and very semantic to
Yes,
start with.
yes.
It's like you got like a semantic segmentation map of your image almost
Yeah,
or something like that.
right. But the eventual intention needs to go through multiple mediums, not just text.
And also, like, say if the user interface is text, then like, well, I guess you're proposing something else. But say if the user interface is text, then I can easily argue it a little bit. Let's try to be a bad guy. I think nowadays people do like prompt extensions, all these things.
Yeah.
Like shout out to my friend Red or Reed.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, they have all these. After you specify like a text prompt, which is like not really specified, they'll have the LLM call like to generate like various like very detailed text prompt that
Yes.
have like different types of like context where the users can then edit the text prompt they choose.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, but I feel like that's not satisfying enough. Of course, like text can describe the image so well, but I feel like that's not intuitive enough for human to say, oh, hey, like I really want to look into these text prompt and then select. It's still very cumbersome process.
Yes,
But I feel like interface is still like a big issue here.
I agree. I also want to clarify. I don't want to remove text from whatever is happening right now. I think it has to be there. Like it can do multiple good things, but it restricts us from doing a lot more beautiful things with images. And I'm just saying it might require new ways to interact with them, new mediums of reasoning. But yeah, eventually. I think text will be a way to just, hey, like, hey Siri, and then invoke it.
Do you think that understanding model internals is necessary for providing the user with the control and ability to express and exercise their intent? Or maybe scale will solve everything. Once the big labs collect enough examples of, it doesn't have to be text, but whatever representation you use for expressing user intent, they collect enough of these examples, they match them with images, they train one model to do this.
Yeah.
And do they still, do you think your techniques are kind of not all the way mech interp, but they are, looking internally and cleverly selecting where to do intervention. Do you think
Yes.
this is needed, or maybe scale will solve everything?
So that's a very good question. And I was asked this question when I gave a similar talk. And so my response is we already have a lot of models like Stable Diffusion XL that spent a lot of money to collect different forms of input output data and train those models, like including Nano Banana now, where you can talk to your images in text. And with these models, by understanding these the ways to interact with them more, unlocks a slight bit more delta than you would use them when you don't have. Right? I'm saying you can use $1 billion to create this one single model that would do most of the things, but I think there's always a way to unlock more out of it if you understand how vision works. Like you can get more use for your user when you understand what it does and enable new controls from it. But I think coming to the next steps that I was suggesting, I do want big companies to spend a lot of money and build those kind of methods, which would eventually allow users to see what the model is thinking through. and then have a sense of intention and that I can change something that the model is thinking of. If it is single model, multiple models, I don't think I have a strong opinion yet because I haven't tested it myself. But it is eventually really, really important that humans feel that their intentions are heard, to be cheesy, right? If that, I don't think that happens with vision models. And there has to be some way for you to show what the model is doing so that they have this sense of control over the generations.
But do I need to have a way to show what the model is doing internally? Or is it enough that I have a way for the user to specify what they want to get? Maybe it's underspecified and then it's being expanded, whatever. But there I have this plan, structured plan, or whatever it is. The model is generating an image. It's working. What do I care how it's doing that internally?
There are models already that do most of the things that I described.
Yeah.
There's always like I think so from Stable Diffusion, I can give you like a quick timeline. Stable Diffusion can just do text to image. And for you to change the image, you have to reprompt. And then Flux came out saying, oh, you can also give an image as an input. So now you can give an image and a text and sort of change it. Nano Banana now said, no, you can keep on talking to your image again and again. And based on this context, I'll generate better images. With each one of them, I think few problems are solved. But it's always this, like there's always researchers that find that, oh, even in Nano Banana, if you work with them, I think it's a good novelty. You can definitely get something out of it. But if you really want to use it in your homeworks, it becomes really hard for you to specify in text what it is you want to do.
Yeah,
So if there is an yeah.
but let's forget about the restriction to text. Maybe the specification is a mix of text and some structured formats, such as the one you showed, this plan
Yes.
that you generated.
Yeah.
That's fine. What I'm specifically here curious to hear your thought on, do you need to understand internally how the model is working to provide the user with the ability to express their intent effectively? Or maybe if we collect enough examples of what users want, in specified in whatever structured format you want or semi-structured format, enough examples of that with matched images or videos, train a big model on that would be enough.
So everything that humans want into
Well,
like
you don't need to cover everything, right? I mean,
I know, I mean like most of the things that like I touched upon, like 3D controls and all the other things. Yeah, I think that's the vision that I'm going towards too. So I would love if people would build it.
You mean, in other words, you don't need to necessarily understand
Yeah.
how the neurons work. As long as people can control it, it's fine. So that's what you're saying. That's your answer. Is that right? Just
Yeah.
be.
Yeah, that's my question.
Oh yeah, I think that's my answer too. So I didn't so in the last in the end when I was showing things, I didn't really allude to I need to understand what the renderer and like the planners are doing. I don't really care about it in that depth. And then I think it still becomes a research interest as to what these models are doing. But to solve the problem that I think we both are talking about, I think you don't need to understand what the model is doing internally. At least there needs to be a way for users to specify what they want and get the desired output in the right way.
Maybe something to consider is that different people might have different medium to express their intention. So some people like for them text is like the easiest way. Other people maybe drawing is the easiest way. And as long as you can train your like pre-train your model with all these mediums as like the way to express intention, then great. I think you can just do pre-training. But if you don't, you might want to understand internals to enable new mediums of communications or something like that. Like maybe understanding internals will help you communicate with the model through a new medium rather than pre-train it with that medium or something like that.
I can see another reason why you might want it, and that has to do with your discovery, because the discovery allows you to perhaps find new things that people have not conceived at all, right? And I'm also curious about your take if you think that we can, like in the in the space of concepts, sliders or whatever, can you find completely new, extrapolate to completely new regions, or you are you mostly interpolating between known things? Can we discover completely novel knowledge or skills from examining models internally, or are we restricted to what we already?
Good question. Yeah, this reminds me of Lisa Schutt's work on AlphaZero. Yeah, I'm not sure how to go about looking for novel visual structure. I understand that in chess, maybe a little bit on how you can think about it. It's much more structured. Structured problem, but with vision, I don't know how to do this. Is it novel or not yet? But I'll think more about it. I'm not sure.
Wait, I thought that's what you were talking about when you were talking about the styles. Like, there are people have found out this many styles, but maybe you can go beyond that. And if you do that slider, if you look at the slider space, multiple times, maybe you can get a style which is not really style that people have explored in the real world. I think that's what the point I thought.
Yeah, no, absolutely. No, the point is the same. I'm not saying the discovery methods will give you new, will not give you new. I'm sure they will. I don't know the way to test it.
Yeah, I think for art is like a case where it's like better defined, right? Like you can define, or not really, it's not really, but it's more defined than like general,
yeah,
visual
like yeah.
You're saying big art is more subjective, that's why maybe we don't claim it's like new normal in comparison.
No, I'm actually saying the opposite. I'm saying that like with art, maybe there is a way to measure like new concepts, because you can measure the similarity to known concepts and known objects. But with general vision.
Yeah.
But maybe if you go to like a scientific regime, maybe then it's easier to define something. Like, I don't, maybe there is a way to do that in a specific way.
Yeah. A dumb idea, but I want to do sliders for gang working, like weird creatures, weird looking cats.
Yeah, I think that's what the UI was trying to do.
Actually, I thought of something else.
Yes.
Maybe I just reminded me of the, it just reminded me of that, discovery in 2020 or 2019, somebody at MIT got a picture of black hole. Mm-hmm. What was her name? But maybe you can create images of some celestial bodies that people have not taken a picture of.
Very nice. Yes. Why not? Yes. But yeah, I think it would be nice if that's possible.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a good.
Maybe people can check it for us.
Yeah.
So I have a question about your vision is to decompose the image into some kind of like some text form, maybe an SVG form that you can really specify and you can mess up. It's sort of like a new programming language, right?
In the near future vision, yes. Future. Yes.
Okay. So in that programming language, do you imagine that every concept you have discovered, or every concept in human knowledge, it becomes some kind of like an operation in the programming language? Like, how do you, let's say, smile? Smile.
Yes.
Does it like become some kind of like a keyword in that programming language, and also like?
Okay, so for, like, it's currently underway project. And what the current version is doing is it has something we call like concept vectors, where it, on top of the language that it's generating, it also has identity as a JSON key, and the value is just a vector. And then for that vector, the model has to always generate the same identity of the person again and again. So like similarly, like smile can be also like a slider kind of an input where you can keep sliding in your the language, and then the output should just change the smile and keep rest of the other things intact. But yeah, we are currently doing it where yeah, I should give a talk about this when it's in a much more baked form. But yeah, like that's the goal, where we try to change, expand everything the model is planning internally into as much as possible, and then generate an output.
Decomposed concept, they become their own keywords or own operation in your programming language.
Yeah. Like a layered tree structure. Like a person can be so many things. Eyes, eye distances, what like shirt they're wearing, and everything should have something of its own. So that's the thing. This language doesn't have to be compact enough for humans to read, but structured enough that if they want to read, that they can go in, or an agent can go in and do that. That's the goal for now. It might evolve as we go.
These image models are so good because they can compose between different concepts.
Mm-hmm.
And there, they have some flexibility. You want them to have that flexibility.
Yeah, the renderer still has that flexibility. I don't impose anything in terms of decomposition on it.
It's pretty into, say, how a Python program gets compiled to assemble and
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
So you kind of want that under specification in the language as well. Because if you can exactly specify everything, how you do that, but it will be like a
too rigid.
Yeah, 1 million line program to generate something simple.
Mm-hmm.
Like you want to have that capability, which makes it a little bit uncertain, not kind of like a 1-to-1 language and programming language to a certain language.
I'll push back a little on that. I don't think I'm going towards making the language as descriptive as possible. That's not what I'm going towards. I want the language to be fine enough that users can control the things that they care about. And like, if they want to describe the identity, they don't have to take millions of lines of code to describe the identity. It can be a single vector, right? And then there can be another model that looks at this identity vector and like can edit it, can change it. But the goal of this code is not to be exactly as Python, and also not exactly as prior models that can do everything in one single model. Like it's somewhere in between, where I want the renderer to be something which is not human, like codable. I want that to do all these weird composition things and create realistic images. At the same time, I want to have a format, what the model is planning for, and have some ways for me to change what it's planning without affecting a lot of things internally. But it's a good question. I don't know how to draw the line between verbose versus controllable. I'm happy to talk more about it. I have multiple versions.
Like, what do you think about like the target audience stuff of like these tools? Because like this reminds me of like when I was a kid trying to learn to use Photoshop. It's like Photoshop, you can do so much with it, but it's so hard to learn because it's like the really verbose center. You could literally do anything.
Yep.
But like you need to have a lot of expertise.
Yeah.
But also like you, so it like it depends on who's using it, right? Like if it's like,
That's a good thing. I think that's why the now is very important in the slide. We finally have tools that can automate these things. You can wipe code things. You can solve most of these problems. If it's code, you can solve most of it by just putting an agent to work and talking to the code instead of actually changing something. I think eventually if this were to work, there'll be definitely two sets of users, one that are like power users that would want to look at the code, change something and work with them. And then ones that would just want to vibe image and then talk to it and say, oh no, move it to the left. And then the code agent would go inside and change just the X, Y coordinates and then re-render the image. It is possible now. It wasn't like it would have been another Adobe Premium Photoshop if it was 5 years ago. Maybe now it's not that.
Do you have any suggestions for like people that don't feel creative or like, that don't have intent? Like, how would you build a system that like helps them be more creative or like develop intent?
Yes. So that I think that was the intention behind my slider space slide, where I was showing that I have such small intent. So, for example, when we came up with concept sliders, the maximum number of creative sliders we could do were 10 or 20. Or 20. As soon as we open sourced that, we had like 10K, 20K sliders online that are all super creative. So one is through crowdsourcing and open sourcing, which I always have a very strong stance on. And another is the discovery aspect of things, where you can allow users. Oh, this was another thing which was about to be on the slides, but was not, which is having a paradigm which will allow users to enhance their intent, like social media, except instead of optimizing on the engagement, you optimize on intent and sort of show them, like when they're working with the system, the UI, you show them, oh, things you might like to explore but haven't ever, or similar users have explored before, or something where the signal is not engagement. Right, it's like not explored before, sort of a small nudge. But again, it's a dangerous territory. I haven't thought more about it beyond that thought. But yes, I think discovery and some sort of a sensible nudge might help users to explore more inside the models.
I guess like another thought is like, I actually have this software for 2 years, but I haven't really done it. I'm always confused why people never use a gaming engine or computer graphics engine to bootstrap controllability.
Yeah.
So we.
Oh yeah, that's what we're doing now.
We have computer graphics like code where you can have actions, move cameras. We can even have LMs to sort of like interfere with the computer graphics code to do editing.
Yes.
That code.
Yeah.
After render an image, then it's probably a much easier problem to bridge between the realism gap of like what your text to image model or text to video model can do versus like the computer graphics generator stuff.
Yes.
I mean, NVIDIA already has some stuff that's like using AI to turn like a graphics thing into something that's more realistic.
Yes.
Then I mean, there's free data over there. I just know I really even play around with it. That just feels such a pity.
I know. I think that's exactly what we're doing with this project now.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, it's a good catch. Yes.
Very cool.
Yes. Yeah, another motivation actually does come from the game engines that you were talking about, the ability to control your characters and the camera angles, motions. And yeah, we want to do that, except have an engine where you don't have to learn it like Photoshop, where the model would do it for you. And the realism can also be in the same power that we have with Imagine GPT right now. To get to that level with game engines is really hard. It requires a lot of like dedicated years of experience to get to that point. Mm-hmm. But yes, it's rich of all the things that we want to do with vision models. Games are like the perfect example of having an explorable medium of vision. So yeah, I think it can be a good data source.
So I am not sure that this architecture you're proposing does actually like serve as a medium to like translate the intent of the user, who is like the person who prompted the model. And the example you showed earlier was very good about somebody prompted a model to write like an email or like a thank you letter for the data or something.
Yeah.
The model did understand this would be really sweet, and so it would have like real positive consequences on it. Now, imagine this example where I'm trying to develop a like drawing for a campaign against like speeding on the road in like a school zone. And my prompt to the model is draw a school and like a no speeding sign and kids crossing the road and a car coming. And the model will probably just like try to draw it exactly as it is without trying maybe to add elements that would communicate my message or the purpose behind this image. So I think language models do, because maybe language is, I don't know, there's something human about it that like emotions can spare more easily through it and is easily, more easily, you know, interpretable than like images. Of course, you can also do that with art, images and other things. And so I'm not sure that this architecture does actually like capture the human intent. And instead, it's just like translating the instruction better and planning and can. It's controllable, seems also explainable.
Yeah.
But I've seen it longer.
No, no. I think with the amount of thing that I've shown here, I think that's a very good intuition. I have 2 points. I think we can very easily solve it with the techniques we have today. One is you can use a pre-trained language model to start your DSL generation from, where you exactly get all the intentions that you are hoping to get at free cost. Another thing is the point that I did for my second roadmap, which is visual reasoning medium. I feel like that will capture a lot of things that what you're talking about in a visual sense. But the, I stopped sharing, sorry. Yeah, you have to go through this. Sorry. Yeah, I think this parser can also be a good way to keep interacting with your images as you draw, right? You can, if the model ends up generating something which you don't intend to and you want to generate, hey, I feel like it's not showing the safety that I want to teach my kids. You can talk to the parser to do it, and it would ideally like plan better in terms of, oh, given this image, the user is intending something else. Let me sort of put this into the play here, right? You can talk your intention through. Or I don't know how the visual medium works yet. I wish I had a more better understanding as to how visual medium reasoning works. But I feel like there has to be some sense of, oh, no, I'm looking for like some, you know, some frightening emotion that looks similar to this image. And then somehow the model needs to make sense out of it in the visual sense. But I think it's definitely possible. It's just it needs to be captured in the right place and using the right medium, I think. Like if you can already say that, hey, my language model does it, I think this can do it too. You just replace one of these parts or fine-tune one of these parts on top of the model you're talking about.
I think maybe the moving language models might be doing it, and I'm just like, because the architecture really doesn't train on data.
Yeah.
Like the medium that the training data is presented is contains very rich contextual information, whereas maybe images may be like isolated from like their role in the world. That's what that's why it's not able to like capture this intent that we're left talking about.
Good point. Yeah. I think pre training might still be necessary eventually as we go down this path. You might still want individual vision models, language model like Dino, and you might still want all these things that can capture the modality information from everything that you want. But if you want to get to a place where you can do all these amazing things, I think we'll have to move to a better fine-tuning regime, I guess.
Oh, there's a comment from Chris. Thank you, Rohit.
Can't stop you anymore with all these amazing.
Oh, you're ready to defend.
Thank you, Chris.
Oh, no, Chris, Too early. Not
That's
yet.
such
I
a
think
pun with the chalk talk person.
he's ready to propose. One more stage.
One more stage.
Yes. Thank you. But on that note, really nice compendium of all your work and your vision for your next stage. Thank you, Rohit.
Thank you all.